Hello and welcome to the Courtney Turner Radio Hour. It is Monday, April 15th, and it is an honor to spend this hour with you. I am here on WWCR Worldwide Radio, and I will be filming this so you can listen to it again and watch it, and I will put up some visuals for you as well, and you can do that at CourtneyTurner.com. That is Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-E-N-A-Y, like Courtney, T-U-R-N-E-R. .com. And if you want to keep this work going, there are all sorts of ways that you can support me there. We have a Venmo. It's at Courtney. Again, that's like Courtney hyphen Turner. You can buy me a coffee. You can do a give, send, go. I also want to make you aware that I have been given the huge honor of being invited to be part of a summit. It's the Geneva Project. So many of you may know that the WHO is planning to do a treaty. And so they're putting together something called the Inspired Global Leadership Summit. And they have invited me to be a part of building the vision to counter the WHO, which is a huge honor. But I cannot afford to go. So if you want to see me there to help them build this vision and combat the WHO and their plans and stop this treaty, then you can make that happen. It will be totally up to you guys. So I appreciate any support possible. You can go to my website and I have a Give, Send, Go specifically for that. So we are trying to raise the money so that we can book the flights, and you know, the trip is pretty expensive. So this will be at the end of May. So that's coming on up pretty soon. But also you can do snail mail. I have a PO box. And that is 6041 Rural Plains Circle, Suite 110. And that is number 106, Franklin, Tennessee, 37064. And so I'll go through some of that at the end, too, in case you didn't catch all of it. But there's lots of great products, too. And, of course, the discount code on all of them is Courts. And I spell that like C-O-U-R-T-Z, Courts. And, so go check those all out. And of course, also, I want to remind you about the CrowdRank, because it is really hard to sift through all the news today. So this is news that's aggregated for you, like a new and improved Drudge Report, if you will. So that's CrowdRank for .news /stack/ Courtney Turner. So go check all that stuff out. Give me some love over there. And today we are going to talk about something that is very ancient, but is very relevant today. So a few months ago, I believe it was, I did an episode on the Lucius Trust. And the UN, and it's a consultancy for the UN, but it's really kind of this spiritual underbelly of the UN. And this was, of course, the brainchild of Alice Bailey, who was a theosophist. She was the disciple of Madame Blavatsky, who started the Theosophical Society. She was one of the co-founders of the Theosophical Society. So if you want to go to my website and find this episode, if you missed it, you want to refresh up on it, it was called Black Money Magic. It was Black Magic, Black Money Magic and the New World Order. Sorry. So we went through the Lucius Trust and what it's all about. It was, of course, originally called Lucifer Publishing. That was a bit too on the nose. So they changed it 2 years later to Lucius Trust. And that, again, so what we're going to talk about today is theosophy, which is a very, very old, old, really religion, philosophy, whatever you would prefer to call it. But it is very old. However, many people attribute the official formulation to Madame Blavatsky. I would say she popularized it. I don't think she created it. And it literally translates to God wisdom. But we're going to get into more of the details of what that really means for them. And as we touched upon when we talked about the Lucius Trust, and this was, of course, there's many branches, right? She has the Arcane School. She has the Goodwill. We talked about the festival week of world servers, the triangles, yes, the world goodwill, and it's let the plan of love and light work out. And this is, of course, a nod to Lucifer, who is the light bearer. And people will argue with me. I do get people arguing with me that theosophy isn't really Luciferian. I'm going to give you some quotes as we go through this from Madame Blavatsky herself, who, you know, we could call her the queen of theosophy. And it pretty much proves that she was a worshiper of Lucifer, of Satan. And it is very much a Luciferian belief system. But unfortunately, it's very, very relevant today because it is the underbelly of the UN. This is the religious consultancy. And when we see what's going on with the UN, that I've talked about this, you know, ad nauseum, and maybe I will do another radio show specifically focusing on this. But I keep talking about it because I want to sound the alarm. And I think a lot of people aren't as familiar with it as I would like. But the UN 100, which is the centennial of the UN, is planning, you know, imagining the world in 2045, which of course will be the centennial of the UN because it started in 1945. So this is in 2045. They are planning an AI world society. So this looks like a cyber Satan to me. But essentially, this is based on a book that was, it's done in conjunction with the Boston Global Forum, written by Michael Dukakis. Some may remember him as the governor of Massachusetts. And he has written this book, Remaking the World, the Age of Global Enlightenment. And what we see when you can go to the website and you can learn all about it for yourself. You can even download the book. You do have to give an email, but you can get the book. It's free and learn all about it. And it is, in my opinion, it's pretty horrifying. They're talking about putting us into a digital prison. They talk about how humans are objects in the AI world society. They talk about creating digital twins for us. They talk about replacing human government. I'm not so fond of government run by humans as is. I don't know that I want that AI is going to do a better job, especially since they will be programmed by humans, right? So they're amplifying the foibles of humanity, and especially of those who program it. And I don't know how I feel about them. So all this to say that it is really important to understand that what is driving them. And it really does look religious. It's not just policy. It's not just, you know, things are couched in very nice platitudes. And I keep saying I want the marketing team of the UN to be my marketing team because they're really, really good at it. So, yeah, so it's Remaking the World, the Age of Global Enlightenment. And doesn't that sound like a nod to the New Age movement? And this, of course, theosophy, right? So I'm going to start off just by reading from, this is a great, I love to go to, you know, really old sources, because you know that you're going to be closer, I guess, to the origins, right? And it's a book called The History of Theosophy. And this is by Colville in 1896. So it was a little while ago, but it was after the Theosophical Society was created. And I'll just read a little bit from the very beginning, to, because he talks about what, you know, theosophy is. And so we're hearing it from, you know, what they thought back then. And so he starts, in attempt to compile a brief popular outline so vast and far-reaching, a movement as theosophy. Now remember, this is even all the way back, this is hundreds of years ago. It becomes to the writer's approach to the subject with absolute fearlessness and impartiality. And most of all, it is necessary for whoever undertakes to write on stupendous and universal a theme to distinctly remember that no limited definition of the word as applied to the tenets of any special society or school of thought can possibly do justice to the term. Theosophists are to be found in all countries, among all bodies of all religionists, philosophers, scientists. For though theosophy may be aptly styled religion itself, or the universal wisdom religion, which is the perennial religion is what Madame Blavatsky says, it is in no sense one religion out of many. True theosophists are Gnostics or knowing ones. Consequently, they cannot be of the number of those who do not know, but simply entertain variable and doubtful opinions and constantly oscillate between blind, deaf, and equally unseeing incredulity. From disbelief to belief, and again from belief to doubt or even denial, is often but single short easy step From ignorance to knowledge is a lengthy pathway, and one, moreover, which none but earnest, loyal minds can truly tread. In ancient times, we will undertake to say how long ago there were men and women on earth far wiser than the bulk of educated people we meet today, that such people did actually live and work many thousands of years ago, no matter of conjecture. For their works remain and are today the wonder and admiration of the world's greatest scholars. To arrive at the approximately correct view of the state of the world many millennia since, we have to but examine monuments of remote antiquity, still existent, read such portions of the oldest scriptures accessible to us, and compare the edifices and writing of the wise men of those far-off times with the finest achievements of the present hour. What would be the probable result of such a study, if conducted strictly in scientific spirit of unprejudiced research? We should assuredly be confronted with two definite conclusions. First, that Wendell Phillips' lecture upon the lost arts, Ignatius Donnelly's Atlantis, Mary Corelli's Ardeth, Albert Ross Parsons' New Light from the Great Pyramid, and a host of other modern publications introducing their readers to scenes of great attainment in all literary, artistic, scientific development among very ancient people are founded upon actual fact. And second, we should be forced to the conclusion that such great learning actually existed, and such amazing products of advanced civilization abounded in days long antedating the historic period commencing with Herodotus. The ancient world did not give expression to the democratic form of civilization to which all modern republics look forward at this very acme of human development. And then he goes on, I'm not going to read all of this, but I do recommend the book. So I am going to read another excerpt from it when we get to a section on magic. But interesting, he actually talks about masters, and we think of masters in many different applications or senses of the word. But the Masons did take a lot of the hierarchical structure from this concept, and we're going to get into that when I get into the origins, which is I'm going to do my best to do just a really brief kind of historical view and then show you why it's relevant today. Obviously, this is way too comprehensive to cover in an hour, and we're already like a fourth of the way in. So I'm going to do my best, but yeah, let me start with a little refresher on Lucius Trust, and we'll show you a little video from their talking about their seventh ray of light, and we'll go through that video. So you can do a little refresher of Alice Bailey, who again is the disciple of Madame Blavatsky, who was one of the founders of the Theosophical Society, which was established in New York City in 1875. So yeah, let's listen to this clip.
The incoming energy of the seventh ray of ceremony and order will be instrumental in bringing about these changes in education. The seventh ray has the ability to blend all of the rays into one great energetic light, bringing illumination, revelation, and order upon the earth. And a wonderful initiative towards this future is the United Nations International Year of Light and Light-Based Technologies in 2015. Throughout the year, the UN will seek to raise global awareness of the science and applications of light, and of how optics and photonics can have a positive impact in fields as diverse as energy and education, agriculture and health. The UN Year of Light occurs at a time in human evolution when the heavens are opening and light is descending all around us, so beautifully symbolized by the all-seeing eye of space telescopes that catch the light radiating from the depths of the cosmos. The time has now come for this to be paralleled by inner vision. The Lucius Trust works to amplify the emerging light of human consciousness in the trend towards inner unity and synthesis within humanity. We hope you will join us in this group service and help to anchor the vision of humanity's next step forward on its remarkable journey into an age of light.
So this is right from the Lucius Trust website. So you can go and, you know, I did a whole video on it, but there's so much on there and it's right out in the open. But there's so many themes in there, weren't there? I mean, you talk about the all-seeing eye in reference to a telescope, but, you know, it seems like there were a lot of, hidden or esoteric, if you will, messages in there. And that is what theosophy is all about. It is, they talk about the different stages, you know, and this comes out of the Neoplatonists, the idea of the neophytes, the initiates, and then the masters. And so there's a lot of communicating to the initiates once you're initiated. And then the masters, they really believe that you could channel masters. And this was interesting from that same book. They talk about it as being a mental science. They say that as we proceed these essays, we will be able to show how the present movement, meaning theosophy, is known as a mental science. It's a direct outcome of the principles inculcated by universal theosophy, divine wisdom. Yeah, I'm not going to go through all of it, but they talk about it. It's a mental science, which is a combination of spiritualism, occultism, and, you know, I was saying how this is super relevant to today. Of course, Madame Blavatsky, I was saying that they founded the Theosophical Society. It was her and Henry Alcott and William Quan Judge. And this was 1875. And the headquarters were in New York City. They, of course, set up several. They went into India for a few years. She was actually, Madame Blavatsky was actually just determined to fraud by both the Psychical Society in England, as well as in India. She was determined to fraud. Her two books were Isis Unveiled and The Secret Doctrine. The Secret Doctrine was very influential on Hitler, actually. And a lot of what we're seeing today with some of the, or just we can go back to Hitler, and, you know, a lot of his belief system came out of The Secret Doctrine. The idea of the Aryan race being superior was very much a proponent of theosophy. And they were actually quite anti-Semitic. They didn't, I'll read it to you. They said that theosophy founded the anti-Semitic. Madame Blavatsky took root in Germany during the decades before World War II. The superiority of the Aryan race is a cornerstone of the theosophic beliefs. However, Aryans were not identified with Germans and violence was not advocated. Arisophy, an extent in pre-Hitler Germany and Austria, was close to Nazi ideology. They believed that only Aryan godmen possessed the occult spirit and soul to lead the spiritual hierarchy of society. Jews were the prototypes of lesser races and were identified as the animal men. The theosophists were very influential on, the Nazi movement. And I think that's, we're seeing a lot of that today as well. So she insisted that it was not a religion per se, that it was more of a philosophy. But I had promised that I was going to show you some quotes from her that do show that it is indeed a Luciferian. So here's a couple of her quotes, and they're from her Secret Doctrine. Lucifer represents life, thought, progress, civilization, liberty, independence. Lucifer is the Logos, the serpent, the savior. It is Satan who is the god of our planet and the only god. The celestial virgin, which becomes the mother of gods and devils and one at the same time, for she is the ever-loving, beneficent deity. But in antiquity and reality, Lucifer or Luciferus is the name. Lucifer is divine and terrestrial light. the Holy Ghost, and Satan at the same time. So what we're seeing right now, I know I'm going back and forth a little bit, and I'm going to go all the way back because I think this really comes out of the ancient mystery schools and the ancient mystery religions, which Blavatsky herself says. But what we're seeing right now is this move towards, I think many of you may have heard that they're trying to create a one world religion. This actually comes out of her disciple, Alice Bailey, talks about this. So she had a moment when she was a teenager in church. She was actually an Orthodox Christian, and or her family was, and she was in church, and she had this ascended master, which is what the Theosophists believe. You know, they channel these ascendant masters, and this guy came to her and told her that, you know, she could accomplish so much if you know, she wasn't so trapped by these oppressive ways. And so he, in her speaking with him, he basically told her that the beliefs and the mission of the Masons, and she ended up marrying Foster Bailey, that's not her maiden name, so Foster Bailey, who was a Mason, and Madame Blavatsky was also a Mason. It was at the time where they had co-Masons, so women, there were some exceptions, and some women were Masons, and Madame Blavatsky was one of them. But Alice Bailey's husband, Foster Bailey, was a Mason, and she had this master tell her that the mission of the Masonry was to create a one world religion, and that was going to be part of her life's work. And it certainly seems that way with the UN, right? And Lucius Truss. And that's what they're really trying to create. So there is something called the Parliament of World Religions. And this started, I would say, the early kind of genesis of it is probably much, much earlier. But it started in, it was 1893. And it was part of the Chicago World Fair. And then they did a centennial meeting. And yeah, they love their centennials, right? I told you about the UN 100. Now we're doing the World Parliament of Religions. It's 100 years later, 1993. And the mission is trying to create a global dialogue of faith. So they say their mission is to create and cultivate harmony amongst the world's religions and spiritual communities and foster their engagement with the world as its guiding institutions in order to achieve a just, peaceful, and sustainable world. To accomplish this, we invite individuals and communities who are equally invested in attaining this goal. The vision of the Parliament of the World's Religions is of a just, peaceful, and sustainable world in which religions and spiritual communities live in harmony and contribute to a better world from the riches of wisdom and compassion. Religions and cultures, fears and hatreds are replaced with understanding and respect. People everywhere come to know and care for their neighbors. Richness of human and religious diversity is woven into the fabric of communal, civil, societal, and global life. The world's most powerful and influential institutions move beyond narrow self-interest to realize common good. The earth and all life are cherished, protected, healed, and restored, and all people commit to living their highest values and aspirations. This sounds lovely, but this is really about, so Theosophy is all about creating, it's all about the one. So they very much believe that we are all one, that there is no individual. It is all about that God is all one. And so the World Parliament of Religions they say it right on the website that it is a 501c3 NGO that's affiliated with the United Nations Department of Public Information. So I just want you to recognize this is tied in with the UN and that it is part of. So this started out in 1893, World Columbian Exposition, Chicago, as I had just mentioned. And then in 1993, and they've been doing these meetings yearly. One of the kind of leaders in this movement is a man named Robert Mueller. And you should go check out some of his videos. They're quite interesting. But I think I'm going to play a video that I have found by someone who has actually been to the... He went in 2015. That seemed to have been a big year for this, you know, for the UN trying to make strides. But he's been to several since. So we'll play that video and you'll see some of the themes and why I find this very concerning. He seems to agree. But this is very much just coming out of this idea that we are all one. They want to lure people by showing that they're super tolerant and, you know, make it seem like they're accepting of all religions. But I personally think this is it's so that they can move towards a one world religion. And of course, this will also lead towards, it looks like they're moving towards an AI world society. And I think they really need to use religion to shape people, to corral people. It also looks kind of like to deceive people, unfortunately. But it is very much, and remember I had talked about, if you heard my Tavistock episodes, I have been talking about what they're up to now. And I think this is very, very relevant. But they say that they say it's an awakening organization and that Gnostic Reticulus, it is now your time. And they are recruiting the Gnostic Reticulus. So I think that that's very much relevant because as we just read that, you know, even from back in 1896, they were saying these theosophists are Gnostics. And they are. They very much subscribe to this belief that we can achieve, we can become God, is essentially what they say, through wisdom. And it's through esoteric wisdom, in some cases, occult wisdom. And that is how we can, and they believe that then they become gods. But it's, of course, only some people. It's only the people who have a rational soul. That's what they call it. They believe in reincarnation. Yeah, we can play the video talking about the World Parliament of Religions.
Welcome to Fringe Pop 321, the show that believes the world is stranger than we think, but thinking should not be strange. We have Carl Teichrib back with us once more. And Carl, I want to ask you a very specific question. Again, I follow you on Twitter, just follow a little bit what you're doing. And you were recently at the Parliament of World Religions. And oh, that just sounds so, what's the right word for it? So spiritual, so uplifting, okay. What in the world is that?
The Parliament of the World Religions is the largest interfaith gathering that we have. It takes place every 3 to 5 years. The first one in terms of our modern era was 1993. The very, very first one took place in 1893, within 1993. And now, 2018, the last parliament that happened took place in Toronto, Canada. And its theme was love and inclusion. Wonderful theme.
What else?
Wonderful theme. I attended the one in 2015 in Salt Lake City, and this one had in Toronto had about 7,500 religious representatives.
7,500.
Yes, the one in Salt Lake City was more. It was closer to 10,000.
Wow.
Representing approximately 200 different faiths, sects, creeds, religious movements, everything from the more unusual, like cow dye, mm-hmm. all the way up to having representatives from the Vatican.
So who gets to go to this? Do you have to be a priest? Do you have to be some official status?
No, you don't have to have official status. It definitely attracts people with official status. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people with official status. There's a lot of people who are understood to be religious experts or that they have a voice as a religious activist. Anybody can go. You do have to register, and there's actually a number of steps you have to take to attend.
So, is that vetting on their end?
Or? Not so much. I think it's more or less them trying to get a handle in terms of just the infrastructure needed for the event itself.
Right. Yeah. What they can expect. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now I have been to other interfaith events, including interfaith events that are far more closed doors, but this one is very open. And it's world recognized, it's understood as being an event that sets the trends in terms of narrative, in terms of language, in terms of how progressive religions will look at themselves and look at the world. And uh, so,
I'm wondering, what is the role of denominational superstructures here? Because, you know, you would tend to think that, okay, let's just say Roman Catholicism,
right,
or Presbyterian Church USA or something like that.
Right.
I mean, they have their own interests, and you have to figure that the people at the top of those structures want to maintain authority.
Right.
So do they surrender authority when people go to this thing? I mean, why would they send somebody there?
Because you're all playing a game of harmony.
Okay.
It's not unity in the sense you're going to take away your diversity. Your diversity remains. But you're all coming together looking for a new narrative, going back to myth, a new myth, mm-hmm, of how to bridge humanity as one. They are going with that oneist worldview. They make no bones about that. Mm-hmm. That is certainly a huge part of this event. And you are preached oneness from beginning to end. They are going with the belief that they can make the world a better place. It really becomes politics. This is really a type of spiritual politics. I entitled the chapter in my book, Spiritual Politics on the Interfaith Movement, because it is spiritual politics. So you come together representing diverse faiths, diverse religions, knowing that sometimes those religions will have a larger constituency than national governments. And so, how do you bring about world change and world transformation? Religions play a huge role because they can shape.
Yeah, okay.
They can shape the narrative, and they can shape how their constituents think.
So, in terms of driving toward a goal, is this viewed as a way to circumvent political structures?
Absolutely.
Okay.
A lot of talk of this being this dismantling sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at the 2018 Parliament, nationalism was a really dirty word. I mean, really dirty word. You are a nationalist supremacist if you engage in, let's say, a patriotic love, mm-hmm, of your nation. We are working for a new international mindset, a new international consciousness. These aren't just religious leaders going. There's a lot of people attending from the United Nations and from other international political entities.
Mm-hmm.
So we had senior advisors from the United Nations. We had people involved heading up NGO committee groups at the United Nations. We had a former Canadian Prime Minister who attended. We had people involved from all levels of politics. The mayor of Toronto was there.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at the 2015 Parliament, Al Gore's daughter, Karina Gore, was a member of the parliament. Al Gore couldn't make it, so he sent us a nice personalized video for all of us at the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And then because that year was the Paris Climate Change Conference, the parliament basically dubbed Karina Gore as their ambassador of climate change. And we put together statements and declarations on climate change and sent her off, mm-hmm, pushed her off to Paris, where she engaged in politics.
Mm-hmm. So, would you say that the agreed upon goals of this unification, this oneism,
mm-hmm,
religiously, would you say that those transcend or are viewed as more important than individual religious positions on,
yes,
things?
Okay. Yes. But then you have to ask the question: what is the unifying principle?
Yeah.
There's a couple of unifying principles.
Yeah, I want to make sure we hit two things. So what's the goal? That's the unifying principle. And I don't want to forget this, but who, if we went there, who would we be surprised to see?
Mm.
Okay, so go ahead. Let's hit the goal.
Wow. The unifying principle is that, there's a couple of unifying principles. Number one, we are all working together,
mm-hmm,
to try to build heaven on earth.
Okay.
There's no bones about this. This is exactly how it's being described. The closing statements of the 2018 Parliament this is their language. We are engaged in an act of salvation. We are saving the world, and in saving the world, we save ourselves. Okay. So this is a salvific message.
Mm-hmm.
The other unifying at a more religious personal level is, how do we find unity? Where do we find this sense of unity? It's in the mythic and in the mystic. It is the recognition that you can keep your religious diversity. The Hindu will be the Hindu. The Christian will be the Christian. The Buddhist, pagan, we will all retain our diversities. But our unity comes in that we can all experience a sense, a a feeling of communitas, of oneness. We can experience a sense of oneness in our community, the ecstatic energy that takes place, our dopamine, our adrenaline, our sense of that mystical experience.
So it's not a forced erasure of distinction.
No.
It's that the distinctions...
It's a perennial acknowledgement.
Okay. All right.
So we're all spiritual. Mm-hmm. We all feel the same spirituality. We had one session in 2015 that brought that out in spades in a big way. We had a group of maybe 300 in the room representing probably 15 or 20 different religions. The moderator asked us all to raise our hands or shout out that aha moment in our religious conversion experience. And so people were shouting out words like transcendence and love, unity, peace, oneness, words like that. And then the moderator stopped and said, listen to yourselves. You're all saying the same thing. You're all speaking the same language. And he made it very clear that it's not at the level of theology where we're coming together. We're coming together at the level of experience.
Okay.
And that's where the enchantment takes place. Because we're all going, ooh, maybe we really are one. The other aspect that comes out at the Parliament of World Religions, and it did in 2015, and did again this time in a major way, was that we're all doing this because we all share an allegiance to the earth. We're all doing this to protect our mother. Mm-hmm. And so at this parliament and at the previous parliament, we had a red tent temple set up. This was the womb of the parliament.
This is the womb of the parliament.
Yeah. Where you can go and, as a woman especially, though a man can join as well, you can celebrate your divine flow. And at the 2015 parliament, we had many, many images depicting the goddess in her various guises. We were told that we were Mother Earth walking. And this is really the embracing of the sacred feminine, the divine feminine. But it's also a recognition that that's part of this whole new myth that we're building.
Do you think that that was more overt paganism this
time? Oh, very much so. Okay. Very much. And the one other...
Why would they feel safe to make it more overt now? Oh, what do you suppose?
Okay, this is one of the beauties of the parliament. Okay. If you want to look at the success aspect of it, in terms from their point of view, and it came out at this parliament that the pagan revival that we've had here in the Western world, and we've had a very significant pagan revival, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It received much of its legitimacy at the 1993 Parliament of World Religions. And see, this is one of the important aspects of what the Parliament does. It legitimizes. And so the pagan world saw that they were being legitimized through the Parliament. The Wiccan community saw legitimacy through the Parliament. And the Parliament, in turn, gave them that legitimacy, gave them a platform, gave them a voice. So at the 2018 Parliament, the religion that was put on a pedestal and was given legitimacy was ayahuasca. We were now legitimizing the ayahuasca experience where you would drink the tea, drink the Kool-Aid, and have that experience with the plant spirits and have that sense of oneness, a psychedelic oneness, a spiritual commune with nature.
Hmm. So that goes on for a bit longer. I think it was Fringe Pop 321. I think that was it. So definitely shout out to them. That was a great interview. I'm going to try and reach out to Carl and see if he will do an interview on my show because he's fantastic. And I want to hear more about his experience. It sounds like he's been to a whole bunch of these World Parliament religious groups, meetings. And I wanted to go back. There was something I forgot to mention before, but we had talked when I did the Black Magic Lucius Truss episode. I had talked about the Age of Aquarius, and they have the Aquarian conspiracy, and they believe that we're entering the Age of Aquarius. And this is why you keep hearing how they, everything should be for the greater good, that it's all about the collective, and they really want to eviscerate any kind of personal sovereignty, individuality, and this is what they believe, according to the Age of Aquarius, that they believe we're now shifting into. It has to do with the good of the group, personal detachment, and concerns for the eclectic whole. And this is, so in terms of astrology, which is something they take very seriously, they see it as the polar opposite of so Leo would be the antithesis. And what is Leo? Leo believes in the individual sovereignty, passionate feelings, and the ability to decide for oneself the appropriate course of action. So we're, it looks like that's, you know, what's playing out. They're trying to usher that in. I also wanted to bring up, you know, one of the theosophists who gave us our, you know, of course, the dollar bill, the United States for $1 bill has the pyramid on it. And what is the saying? It's Novus Ordo Seclorum. And what does that mean? It means a new order for the ages, right? So like new age, new order, new world order. It is not new. This is all very old. And the pyramid is very, very old. I actually just did an episode with my friend Jamie Hanshaw, and I didn't know this, but, you know, in their meditation room at the Lucia Trust, which we did talk about, that black cube, apparently it's a trapezoid, which is when you cut off the top of a pyramid, you have a trapezoid, and it makes it easier to trap, like, dark spirits. I don't know too much about the symbology of all of that, but I do know that, you know, Pythagorean was, you know, one of the, he very much was a leader of a secret society, and it was very much a, you know, based on ancient mystery schools. So some things I just wanted to mention that, you know, he had gone through just to kind of drive home were, he talked about how they preached oneness. This is very much a theosophical belief system. He talked about Mother Earth, right? And what are we seeing now with the whole climate religion? And this is very much a religion. They keep talking about how the Earth is going to end, and we have to, I did all the shows on the NACs, the natural asset companies, how they're trying to do this major land grab, and they're doing it in the guise of conservation. We're preserving the planet, right? This is all about Mother Earth, Gaia religion. And but it's at the expense of humanity. The I talked about the Aquarian Age. Then you talked about the Wiccan religion, giving it credibility. So literally, giving credibility to witches and to occult belief systems and pagan belief systems. And the ayahuasca, and this is something I have gotten a lot of flack for talking about. I didn't actually know that they had this at the Parliament of the World Religions, but it makes so much sense that, you know, they were talking about how the ayahuasca religious beliefs and ceremonies give people a sense of feeling oneness. I went and watched some of the videos, and they talk about how it gives you this sense of oneness. And I think essentially it opens up, they believe it opens up portals to channel, and it would look like it, you know, could possibly be channeling demons. And for them, that was very powerful, right? Lucifer is the illuminated one. So let's see. Let's go back to, I wanted to start with, I was saying how, because I think we are running out of time a little bit. So I want to back up. Where does this all come from? And I had talked about the ancient mystery schools, and I think this really does kind of originate there. But they, and in the ancient mysteries, they worship, some of the ancient gods like Hermes, who was also known as the divine trickster. He was the, yes, I want to get to the spiritual hierarchy. I won't forget that. He was the divine trickster, and he was the god of the thieves, the herd. So again, this group mentality, this collective comes up again. And what are we seeing now? We're seeing all of these, corporations forcing things like the DEI. I went through that with the sensitivity training, episode that we did last week, all of this, the ESG score, but it's all under the guise that somehow it's for the group. It's better for the group. And these themes keep coming up. So some of the influences that that theosophy, and this comes out of Blavatsky herself, she says that it's a combination of Eastern mystical concepts as well as Western mystery tradition, and that Hermetic Rosicrucian, It was Hinduism, Buddhism, spiritualism, Gnostic Christianity with Masonic ritual and a systematic criticism of Christianity. And I can go through some quotes where she says that Theosophy, even though they accept all religions, somehow it's diametrically opposed to Christianity. She does say that. Judaism and Islam, based in the visions of revelation that Madame Blavatsky had, the Mahatans of Tibet, and the spiritualism that she lived in the United States. So the Mahatans are, you know, these ascended masters, these, you know, spiritual guides. So I wanted to pull up again the spiritual hierarchy that they talk about, the Lucius Trust. And this is a very much a theme of Theosophy, that there is a spiritual hierarchy, and they believe in reincarnation. So they're talking about the evolution of humanity, and it's an evolutionary consciousness. And this is something you're seeing from a lot of the New Age gurus, right? People like Deepak Chopra, Barbara Max Hubbard, who are some of the other ones, like Bruce Lipton. There is actually a whole group, it's called the World Evolutionary Leaders, and they're all talking about this, but you hear it through everywhere. You hear it through like the UN, you hear it through even the World Economic Forum people. This is something, and certainly throughout the whole New Age movement. I mean, a lot of the, you know, entertainment and media leaders like Oprah has brought on a lot of New Age people. And the spiritual hierarchy, this comes right off of the Lucius Trust website. So you can go and look at that. This is the World Evolutionary Leaders. And I have heard these at the World the Parliament of World Religions. They talk about the evolution and the, you know, evolution of consciousness. And another phrase that we keep hearing, Christ consciousness, this comes out of Theosophy as well. This is not saying, because they believe that God is within us, that we are all one. They do not believe that, you know, there is a creator. They talk about there's different, you know, sects of Theosophy. So they have nuanced differences in their belief systems. However, they don't believe in the separation of Trinity. It's all combined. So, and this Christ consciousness that they talk about is not in a Christian sense. They believe that Christ was actually one of the ascended masters. So throughout time, an ideal group of wise, enlightened beings working behind the scenes to guide our planet has been conveyed in spiritual teaching, in literature, and myth. The group has been known by many names, including the spiritual hierarchy, the Masters of Wisdom, the Elder Brothers, the Rishis of India, the Communion of Saints. During times of crisis in human affairs, great teachers have emerged from the hierarchy into the world of time and space. These have included Socrates, Sri Krishna, Muhammad, the Buddha, and Christ. Spiritual hierarchy can be understood as reservoirs of lighted, loving energy on the inner side of life, a presence of hierarchy, of higher reaches of consciousness. They are the substance of what is often referred to as the kingdom of God. Mystics and seekers of every faith have always known this. It is the energies and these beings that shape the evolving sense of purpose and direction in human affairs, and that are awakening us now as a species to new understanding of oneness. As we move through this difficult transition period, our future stands in the balance. It is up to humanity to accept responsibility for instituting the necessary changes so that we will begin to realize our higher spiritual possibilities. That way, we will be cleared for these great teachers to return to outer physical plane activity. It is important, therefore, that more people know about the fact of the hierarchy and about what sort of individuals the Masters of Wisdom really are. So let's go in some of the time that we have remaining. Let's go back to where I really think some of the codification of this originates, which is under the Neoplatonists. And let me see, I have this from the Theosophy Trust. So there's a Theosophy Trust website. They're, the Theosophical Society, by the way, still in full blown. It's still very much in effect. And this was interesting. They have a whole thing on the Age of Aquarius and on their site. But they also have, I don't know if I have this page pulled up, but I will just go through it. So they talk about the Neoplatonists, and they have a whole course on it from the Esoteric School. And they start with, what I'm kind of getting from what I've read, and I'm not an expert on Theosophy or on Neoplatonism or religion. So from what I am ascertaining, it really looks to me like Neoplatonism was coming around the same time that Christianity was coming on the scene, and it was competing religions. And so when Plato was, doing his academy, and he was around, it was 400 years before Christ. So that wasn't on the scene at the time. Christianity wasn't a thing. But during Neoplatonism, it was. And it does seem like they were very much competing. And so you had they started with, Ammonius Saccas, who was one of the precursors of Neoplatonism. And Saccas means the sack bearer. And he actually, so it's very interesting because a lot of these theosophists were Christian, and they rejected and rebelled against Christianity. And he abandoned it for a Platonic study. He left no writings because this was occult esoteric teaching. So most of his writing is through Plotinus. And so he's had a couple of disciples. It was Plotinus, it was Origen and Irenaeus, and they had all pledged that they would not share any of his doctrine. However, it was taught through Porphy, who was another disciple originally. However, Irenaeus broke this promise, and so Plotinus and Origen, I might be mispronouncing these Greek names, but they didn't feel they needed to uphold this any longer. And so they started doing these writings, and we talked about how he honored the ancient mystery schools and the ancient mystery religions. He believed that the deity, and this is really the origins of Theosophy that we're seeing, the deity was the absolute principle, the transcendent, indescribable, and incomprehensible. And they believed that if a soul was immortal and of divine origin, then theurgy, through the divine work, that the art of total self-transformation and all transvaluation of all experience would then be possible. So they believed that you could transform human nature, and you could essentially perfect it through the sacred light that was revealed. So for those who are watching, and if you're not, I would recommend you go look up the symbol for Theosophy. You will see a lot of symbols that are very familiar. Of course, there's the swastika, there's the Om, there's the Ouroboros. You see the star. It's very, very interesting. There's a lot going on there. So they believed in a pursuit of universal divine wisdom, Theosophia of the ancient school. And they had the teachings were divided into as I had mentioned in the beginning, the neophytes, the initiates, the masters, and they were bound by pledges and oaths to secrecy. And we see this throughout all of these different secret societies and different occult religions. So Origen was another one of the disciples, and he was actually the Christian head of the Catechical School of Alexandria, and he taught allegorical commentaries on scripture. So they were literal, symbolic, spiritual interpretations, and he very much influenced Renaissance thinkers like Pico della Mirandola. And he taught doctrines of reincarnation and the perfectibility through self-devised means and efforts. And this is, so I, I don't have time to go into, we can go through history and people like Hegel, Swedenborg, Jacob Boehm, you know, the Bohemian movement, Bohemian Grove. These are all theosophists. And we see even now with, you know, people like Yuval Noah Harari talking about how we can, you know, we can become gods. And this is a Gnostic principle in general. But as the history of theosophy, Colville told us, they are Gnostics. And they really believe that it was through divine wisdom, that's what theosophy means, that they could become masters and they could ascend and they could become one. That's essentially what they believed, and they would become God in that sense. So I hope I've at least scratched the surface so you understand why this is important and why this is really, it is the, you know, Blavatsky called it the perennial religion. And I think that is what we're seeing. This is, you know, one of the oldest belief systems, and, you know, runs very counter to the biblical framework that believes that we are, you know, made in the image of a creator. And she has a quote where she says that it runs specifically counter to Christianity. I won't read the whole quote, but the paraphrasing is essentially it runs counter to Christianity because it is because there is no esoteric wisdom in Christianity. So it is lacking the light of Lucifer. And so therefore, it is diametrically opposed. But it seems to be, my point was that it is very old, but it is also incredibly new. This is the direction they're going in. I think, you know, when they're trying to create essentially the oneness, right, the singularity, what is the AI world society that I keep talking about? That is the all one. That is the singularity, essentially. So yes, if you enjoyed this, please go check out the rest of my work at CourtneyTurner.com. That is spelled like Courtenay, CourtenayTurner.com. And you can find all of my work there, all of my podcasts there. And again, if you want to send me to the WHO, to fight the WHO in Geneva, you know, please contribute to the Give, Send, Go. And what they're doing is really incredible. They have a really beautiful vision for building a parallel, you know, parallel model where we can achieve some sort of sovereignty in terms of nations and personal sovereignty, health sovereignty, get us out of the WHO, get us out of the UN. This is what we need to be doing. So I'm incredibly honored to even be invited. And I would love your support to help me get there. And of course, if you just want to help keep the podcast going, you know, liking, sharing, subscribing, send me nice words of support, all of those things I greatly, greatly appreciate. And any other kinds of support as well, of course. So thank you so much for watching and listening.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.